Hello, and welcome to the Honest Politics Podcast. My name is Alex Gamsik, and I am the founder of Honest Politics, LLC. You can go to honestpoliticsllc.com to learn more about my business and how I can help you in your political life. So today we're going to talk about Kamala Harris's campaign and why it failed. I have six basic points to go through, and we'll start with the very beginning, her launch video. You can tell a lot about a campaign by their logo. And if you look at Kamala Harris's campaign logo, my first impression that it was old-fashioned and that the colors were kind of faded and the lettering was a little different. And online, I saw that it was kind of a throwback to what I'm assuming is a civil rights kind of movement or something which would explain why it looks older. I just don't know enough about that, but a 2019 presidential campaign logo, it looks dated to me. And For the People implies that it's going to be a populist campaign. So was it going to be an old-fashioned campaign or a populist campaign? It didn't really turn out to be either of those. I mean, you look at Warren and Bernie, they seem much more populist than the Kamala Harris campaign ever was. Kamala's debate performances and interviews, you never really got a For the People vibe. And now we're going to turn to her policies. She seemed kind of waffling between the two super liberal and moderate camps, maybe leaning more towards the super liberal, but she just had some odd policies, especially, I know on Twitter there was a lot of complaints about one of her black empowerment policies, which would have forgiven loans for minorities who started a business and succeeded in so many years. And it was so ultra-specific that it drew quite a lot of criticism, especially from the far left. And then you had a ban on the importation of assault rifles to deal with gun violence. Now, there's 300 million plus guns in the United States, and most of those guns are made here in the United States. So a ban on importation of assault rifles is pretty much just a gimmick. It doesn't actually do anything. It's just such a weird policy to get behind. And if she's trying to use that kind of stuff to break out, it's just not going to work. Now we're going to turn to her support base. You would expect black voters, women voters, and California voters, especially California donors, to help her campaign accelerate. It didn't turn out. She had pretty low numbers in all three categories, whether they're black, women, or from California. Then we're going to turn to debate performances and interviews. That moment of when Kamala Harris said, "That little girl was me," you know, to push back on Biden for race, boosted her campaign numbers quite a lot. But it never even eliminated Biden's really strong support with black voters. It was so hard to break into Biden's support that Kamala never got that core constituency. And that debate moment was not followed up with subsequent outbreak performances. You saw her, as soon as the next debate started, there was a back and forth between Joe and Kamala, but it seemed kind of, it was kind of tempered down. And honestly, that debate moment, the first time when Kamala got the huge boost, it wasn't that moment specifically that made it. It's the lead up to it. You know, my cross country coach always said, the cardiac hill, which is the hardest hill to climb in the race, is not hard because it's one steep hill. It's because you're running half a mile uphill to get to that hill on a very low incline that most people barely notice. It's when Kamala said, "Hey, everyone, let's stop like the food fight or whatever," and she had a few other great moments. Then it led up to that climax. That is why she did really well in that debate, and that's why she skyrocketed in the polls. But then I was paying attention, very much so, and listening to her many post-debate interviews. And to be honest, I was shutting those interviews off halfway through because it felt very boring, very just run-of-the-mill Democrat, very tempered. And I want to talk about this temperance for a moment because it's something I've heard briefly and it makes sense to me. You know, most of these campaigns are driven by consultants. Now, these consultants will advise on speech pacing, you know, how fast a candidate talks, the volume of their voice, the tempo, the, you know, all this stuff. And women in particular, women politicians may have a tougher time. They do have a tougher time because they have to not seem shrill or shrieky or, in my personal opinion, I think sometimes female politicians might remind men or women of their angry mothers. So they don't want to come off as yelling or bossy or screechy, which I know is all very sexist perceptions, but I think it is rooted in this maternal fear of discipline, fear of maternal discipline. I'm not going to keep going into it because I haven't read too much into it, but I know from reading Hillary Clinton's book on her campaign, for instance, and from interviews, that women politicians do have to tread waters very lightly. And the fact that Kamala Harris, even her opening video, her voice is just kind of calm and temperate and not exciting. Whereas I feel like Elizabeth Warren ignored all that and kind of unleashed herself, and she's doing great in the polls. She comes off as more authentic because she is kind of shouting and raising her arms, and you know, she's being Warren. She's being who she is. And that's something that if you're going to win as a woman, you're going to win being yourself. And no matter what the consultants tell you, it's nowadays especially, you need to kind of be yourself. And whether Kamala was being herself or she was being advised to, you know, keep her voice down or whatever, it turned out well. Now, I'm sorry for going that far into it, but we're going to turn to her diversity real quick as a woman black candidate. And like I said, it should have helped her out with a few constituencies, but didn't. From my own research, it seems like people do not choose candidates specifically because they have what I call diversity points. You know, people aren't choosing Mayor Pete just because he's an LGBTQ candidate. They're not choosing Warren just because she's a woman. It might be a factor in some people's decisions, but I think people are taking a look holistically at these people. Let's turn to polling. So if we look at the chart that's on Wikipedia's page for the 2020 Democratic primaries, you can see pretty clearly she started off about 5%, which is decent, rose to about 10-11% in early February, spiked up in June, July after that debate performance, and then pretty quickly fell back to her mean of 5%. You can see where the polling is. And I looked at the most recent poll that 538 collected from Survey USA. So Kamala Harris was at 5% nationally, which is where her mean was originally, where she first started out with support. So she hasn't really gained or lost too much support overall, even though it's gone up and down. But she's at 5% nationally right now, according to the A-ranked poll by 538. In California, where I said before she should be strongest because she is literally a senator there, she's at 10%. And you don't want to have a Marco Rubio situation where you lose your own state in the primary. So we look at Biden, who has 28% in California, which, considering how hyper-liberal a lot of Californians are, it's surprising that Biden is doing so well. Warren's at 13%, Bernie 19%, Harris is at 10%, Buttigieg is at 9%, Yang is 4%, Booker's 3%, Tulsi's 2%. If Buttigieg is catching you in California, you have to look at your campaign. And looking at her campaign more closely using articles from Politico and the New York Times, her campaign was kind of in disarray for a couple months. A lot of it seemed like it was mixed messaging. A lot of it was mismanagement, stuff like that. Having your sister a major part of the campaign. 538 was saying on their podcast, for the Trumps, that might be a benefit to have such loyal people, you know, your family. But usually in business or politics or something, some professional environment, you don't want a supervisor-employee relationship based on anything other than professionalism. You don't want sexual relations, you don't want family relations, and you certainly don't want both. So we'll move on from that and say that where we're going from here, is Kamala Harris going to be attorney general or vice president or something else? I don't know too much about her background. For instance, I haven't read her campaign book or any autobiography or anything, but it seems like the most obvious pick is attorney general. And that's what I'd been thinking from the beginning, is that might be what she's going for. And I think she might be a good fit for that, because of the reasons I already stated and given her lackluster campaign overall, I don't think she's a good vice presidential pick. You want someone who's charismatic and exciting to be a vice presidential pick. And that's kind of my summary of the Kamala Harris campaign. Hopefully you learned a little bit from this podcast. I was happy to bring it to you. If you want, you can go to honestpoliticsllc.com and you can hire me to do any kind of political consulting you'd like. I mean, even just like the analysis of her launch video is something that you're not really going to get from the New York Times or Washington Post. It's something very specific that you would ask me for. And I can get that to you. Everything's rated in 15-minute increments, so even a 15-minute phone call with me is only $8.25. That's really not that much money for a master of public policy's time. And I'll see you next time as we continue to discover more of the stories behind the statistics. So today we're going to talk about Kamala. Oh my god.